This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hills, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This is North South.
Hey everybody, Tim Kawakami here. The latest episode of North and South. We skipped last week. Lots of things have been going on. Dylan Hernandez from the Los Angeles Times is here with me as my co-host. Dylan, you ready to do a big show here? Big jam-packed show?
Yeah, we got a lot of stuff going on. I was just up there visiting you.
I just saw you. My goodness. Lots of Dylan Hernandez in the Levi's Stadium press box for that classic tilt 49ers versus Rams with no quarterbacks and no Aaron Donald and all sorts of other things. But I think it seems likely to me that we're going to see that again in a couple weeks. I don't know how you feel about that. Rams versus Detroit coming up this weekend. If the Rams win, it's very likely that they'll play the 49ers next. Do you like the Rams over the Lions right now?
I think they have a chance. I think I'm a little bit, the only hesitation is I could see a scenario where Stafford just gets absolutely beat up. You know, I think in the middle of the season, they were doing a really nice job of protecting him. You know, they kind of got a run game going. But, you know, I think it's a little bit different now, too, when, you know, you could see now when the opponents know that the run could come, they have trouble running in those types of situations. You know, this is not a team, I think, that wants to be playing ahead very much. You know, you want Stafford kind of dropping back and just throwing in as much as he can. But that also kind of opens them up to getting hit a lot, you know, which we've seen again in recent weeks. We saw it at the beginning of the season, and we've kind of seen it in recent weeks again. So, you know, given how strong, right, the Lions' pass rush is, some concern there, I think, in terms of, you know, can they give Stafford enough time to kind of make the plays that he has to make. But I do like the McVay, Goff part of it. Obviously, they got rid of him for a reason, right? There's certain – and as much of a stand-up guy as he was here, and, you know, I think all of us who covered him, right, thought that he had kind of the right disposition to kind of deal with the ups and downs of everything. They know that there's certain throws that he can't make, and, you know, my guess is that they're going to try to force him into those types of areas. And so, yeah, I think, I mean, you know, given kind of this disparity in seeding and stuff and how their seasons have gone in a way, I do kind of like their chances. I think there's a pretty good chance that we'll be up there, San Francisco in another week.
I'm going to look at it from a very NFL, like alpha kind of way. Who's more likely to kind of turtle in the moment? Stafford going back to Detroit, obviously where he's been was for many years, didn't win playoff games, but he was, kind of carried the franchise for a lot of years. Or Jared Goff at home going up against Sean McVay and the Rams. I just think the more likely kind of flinch is Jared Goff and the Lions. Have not played this first playoff game in this era. Very talented team, but, man, I don't think they're great defensively. And I think the Rams are – I mean, not that, you know, impossible to tell from what I saw last weekend for either the 49ers or the Rams, but I think the Rams could score some points and get things pretty tight over there. And then they'll be like, okay, Jared, you've got to get the touchdown here. You've got to. And I don't like the Lions in that situation. I kind of think the 49ers think they're going to end up playing the Rams. I think 49ers think they're going to end up playing. You know, the Rams are beating the Lions. I just feel like it's – maybe it's all wrong. Maybe – and the Lions are very talented. Rams – but I think the Rams defense is pretty good right now, Dylan. Would you say that? Like, the Rams defense has been an under – kind of sold part of this kind of rise back up to relevancy.
Yeah, I mean, anytime, right, you have a player like an Aaron Donald who's going to take two, three defenders on a given play, obviously that's opened stuff up for, you know, Kobe Turner, who's obviously had a big year, could be the defensive rookie of the year. You know, they had a lot of young guys kind of step up. You know, if I think – I do think that kind of the defensive backfield, if you look at, like, there being kind of an area of concern on the defense, that's probably it. You know, again, they have, I think, about $80 million in dead money right now. You know, so next year, you know, again, when you're kind of like projecting this ahead in terms of where they could upgrade, I'm guessing that it's going to be in that part of the field. But I think you're right. You know, I think Aaron Donald is still, you know, he might not be quite the Aaron Donald of, you know, 3-4 years ago, but man, he's still pretty good, you know. And again, anytime you have one guy taking that much attention, you know, from an offense, I think it opens up stuff for other guys. And yeah, so, you know, and going back to your point about the Goff, you know, McVay and Stafford thing, you know, I think Stafford's almost kind of playing with house money in a way, right? I mean, he's beloved. And, you know, and I remember, you know, the year that the Rams won the Super Bowl, you know, I was calling around sports bars in Detroit and stuff and talking to drunken patrons there. And everybody loves Matthew Stafford, right? Nobody begrudged him for leaving the way he did. I think the impression that I got was that people were very happy for him. You know, I think he was very involved in the community over there. So this is, he's going to go there. He's going to get a great ovation. There's really nothing to kind of prove there, right? It's kind of, again, he's playing with house money. He left, he won his Super Bowl. There's nothing here that's going to change, I think, Detroit's perception of Matthew Stafford, or even anyone's perception of Matthew Stafford. Goff has everything to play here for, right? I mean, because, you know, again, with McVay and Goff, I really feel that for both guys, actually, that, you know, that split and kind of what's happened afterwards has really kind of defined both guys, you know. And I think at the time it was really, you know, with McVay, you know, with just the way when he benched Goff, it was kind of this thing of like, hey, I'm not at fault here. It's because I have a quarterback who can't make these throws. And it was a really kind of ugly split. And I think McVay, you know, when he talks about it now, admits he probably didn't handle it the best. But I think that, yeah, so Goff is going to have like a lot riding on this, you know. And so kind of to your point in terms of, you know, I kind of like a loose and free Matthew Stafford more than I do a Jared Goff with a ton of pressure, you know, career defining pressure on top of him.
I'll tell you, if you ask the 49ers who they'd rather play and you injected some truth serum, I think they'd say they'd rather play Detroit. You know, younger team, first experience in the playoffs, you'd get them out of that dome. I think in Jared Goff, 49ers have beat, you know, they just drummed Jared Goff. They have recently. Stafford beat him in a big game. And Stafford is like, Shanahan was pretty clear about this today. He's like, if you're talking about teams you don't want to face, it's the one with a great quarterback. And Stafford is sort of a great, well, I guess I wouldn't call him a great quarterback, but he is a Super Bowl winning quarterback and can make throws. And you put that with McVay's system and some talent on defense. I think 49ers are expecting the Rams, but they would probably like be happy as hell if the Lions pick them off and the 49ers do not see them. I think the Rams are the toughest team in the NFC for the 49ers right now. I don't think they're overpowering. Obviously, I don't think like this is a Super Bowl team. There's a lot of criteria they do not meet in that, but just that quarterback and their receivers, Puka Nacua, Cooper Kupp, you know, we know where the talent is. I think that's the team the 49ers are like. That's a team that could match up pretty well with 49ers. And I just don't see the other one. I mean, the Cowboys would be the other one, but 49ers have beat the Cowboys the last 2 years in the playoffs, so I'm not sure there. I just think it's the Rams 49ers are kind of headed to something in 2 weeks. I'm calling it right now.
Do you think that there's still a Shanahan McVay dynamic at all?
Oh god,
you know,
oh,
obviously
god.
For yeah. Right, because we saw, well, for years we saw it was just such like a, from the Rams standpoint, right? It was kind of this thing that even in the building people didn't really want to talk about, you know. Right, and even just this past Sunday, as meaningless as that game was in a way, you know, they were kind of like, well, we won here, we don't have to hear about this for a while.
Nine straight regular there was
some of that there, you know. So like, I'm just kind of wondering.
There. It's, it's, No question. And that's part of, like, it's not just Sean. It's a lot of Sean McVay. Obviously, it's Raheem Morris. That's one of Kyle's closest friends, not on his own staff. Like, they're frenemies. Like, they talk trash to each other. Kyle was pissed after losing that game. He volunteered that they were trying to stop Puka Nacua from breaking the rookie records. Like, they were absolutely double covering him to make him play in the third quarter. And he like said, yeah, I wanted him to feel the same stress we were feeling because, like, we had to play some guys and we didn't want him to get hurt. What's he saying? Like, maybe Puka Nacua, they play him in the third quarter, he gets hurt. Like, it's hard to kind of frame this for real world stuff, but this is how coaches think. Like, we got to play these guys. Fuck you. I'm going to make you have to play your guy if you wanted to break a record. It's friendly, but it's also super competitive. Hey, McVay's got a Super Bowl. Kyle Shanahan does not at the moment. I just think it's that kind of edginess, and Shanahan and coaches feel it in various levels with everybody. He really feels it with Sean McVay. And, you know, he was the number one guy when they were all together in Washington, right? His dad was a head coach, but he was the offensive coordinator. He gathered all these guys, and McVay is kind of, you know, superseded him at least to the Super Bowl. I think all that stuff is there. We'll feel it all again. It was there in the Puka Nacua. It was there just kind of the way that game unfolded. There's something there. I think Kyle really liked to have that regular season winning streak, especially because he lost the NFC Championship game a couple years ago. But it's there. They're two really good coaches. Run the same system, deal with the same groups of other coaches, hiring, you know, various people who they both know, and they're in the same division. So they see each other twice a year, and they've seen each other in the playoffs, might see each other again. It's fun. It's good for us to talk about the Shanahan coaching tree. It's all very interesting. And again, I'm putting Raheem Morris right in there because he's actually playing against Raheem Morris, right? The DC. I think Raheem really should be a head coach somewhere else very soon. But for now, Shanahan's going against two of his closest friends, if they end up playing.
I want to touch on the other football team in Los Angeles. And obviously, mm-hmm. You know Harbaugh well. If that winds up kind of becoming, you know, coming to fruition here, how do you see that kind of playing out? What do you like about, or I assume you like it?
He would be a good hire. Now, he'd have to get the right executive in there with him. I'm sure if the Spanoses are doing this right, they have not done something like this. They don't hire high profile coaches. It's going to be expensive. I think they should do it. This is why you're in LA. You're tapping into more money. You've got the quarterback. This is you're never going to have a quarterback like this in this era. Don't mess around with it. Get Jim Harbaugh. Bring in Tom Gamble. I think has been an assistant GM with 49ers and joined Jim in Ann Arbor, and then actually worked for Prem Bulky in Jacksonville, which is the only person in live who could have worked for either one of those guys or worked for them both separately. Then Tom went back to Ann Arbor, and he's just a key liaison. Like, things were calm with the 49ers, even between Bulky and Harbaugh, when Tom was around, because he could kind of work with both. So Jim needs a guy like that. I think he'll bring Tom with him. Maybe there'll be other executives, and the Spanos better leave them alone. Like, you know, if they start meddling, then you might have a meltdown. But if you leave Jim Harbaugh alone, he's going to get things organized. The locker room's going to be, kind of unified. They're not going to be buddy-buddy with them, but they're going to win. They're going to understand the path towards winning, the physicalness. And I think you and I would agree the Chargers have been not a very physical team. They've been pretty soft, frankly. For all that talent they've got, you can always gain 7 yards on the ground against them, right? Always. There's not a lot of pushback there. They get close, then they lose at the end. I think Harbaugh probably bring his defensive coordinator with him from Michigan. He did that when he was at Stanford. He had Vic Fangio as his defensive coordinator at Stanford. Think about that. Defensive coordinator at Stanford was Vic Fangio. Brought Fangio to the 49ers. Like, he's really good at kind of collecting staffers who really make sense. He'd have to hire offensive coordinator. Greg Roman, is available. I don't know if it would be Greg, but somebody like that. For all his huge personality and burning bridges, and he's never best friends with these assistants. He hires good ones, and they want to go to him because he leaves them alone. You trust them. He leaves them alone. They do their stuff. Vic Fangio would have gone with him, I think, to the Vikings if he had got that job a couple of years ago. Fangio's not attainable now because he's highest paid assistant in football with the Miami Dolphins going to playoffs. But like, Vic doesn't screw around with people meddling with him. Vic runs the defense. Lord Fangio was his nickname. And certainly that was his nickname with Harbaugh. And Harbaugh didn't mind that at all. So he'll bring some, you know, you're going to have to pay some assistance. That's one of the things that pissed off Jed York about him with the 49ers is he had the highest paid coaching staff in football. And Jed didn't understand, like, if I'm going to pay him all this money, why am I paying all, you know, assistant coaches at every position? If you're the Spanoses, you're buying into all that. If you've got a lot, $10 million for the assistant coaching staff, and you're paying Jim $15 million a year and his GM six, so what? That's the price you pay. You're making a lot of money. And I just think we'll see if the Spanoses can make that leap. Sometimes you learn your lesson through screwing up a lot, and I think they've screwed up a ton, and you just turn it over to him. And it's not going to be the Brandon – you know what my criticism of Brandon Staley? It's just like he's trying to please everybody. He's trying to, win over the, Twitter. He's trying to get the analytics community to write positive things about him. That is not Jim Harbaugh. You are not – Dylan Hernandez, I hate to tell you this – you're not getting Jim Harbaugh for 10 minutes after practice every time you show up. That is not happening. You're not palling around with him and joking about what – that is not – he's not Mr. Small Talk. He is, I'm going to talk to you, and then I'm going to go inside of my office, and you're leaving me alone. I might get some extra time with him, but I don't think you are. This is just who he is.
One thing I'm curious about is, I think a lot of times when we see franchises turn around, right, new coach comes in, there's kind of a different air. I just remember when they went, say the Rams went from Fisher to McVay, McVay's running around everywhere, right? There's just kind of this more youthful type of energy in the air. What is kind of, when you kind of go back to the early days of the 49ers when Harbaugh was there, how did kind of the air of the, training camp, so to speak, change?
Yeah, that was a weird one because that was a strike season or, lockout season. So everything kind of got thrown together at mm-hmm. once. And the 49ers were holding voluntary workouts run by Alex Smith at San Jose State for weeks. And, the coaching staff couldn't have part of it. He got the playbook to Alex right before the lockout happened so they could run some of his stuff. I think what you really get, though, is it's accountability. You screw up, you're going to hear about it. You aren't physical enough, you're not going to play for him. It's very clear. Again, he's not palling around with these guys. He did not have close friends, even on the staff or in the locker room. Frank Gore, maybe, you can understand where, Frank Gore would love that kind of stuff. It's meat and potatoes. It's like, we are men playing a physical and violent game, and we're going to approach it like that. And it's going to be, there's not going to be joking. I mean, some joking around, of course, there's always going to be some, but not like screwing around. I wouldn't say businesslike, but it's serious. It is like you let your personality shine, but do it in a way that shows your commitment to what's happening on the field. It's very, very serious. And Harbaugh is very serious. He can be goofy, but he's not, he actually doesn't mean to be funny. He's just being himself. I think there will be to go from Brandon Staley, who, again, I might be overreading this, but I always see he was always looking at everybody else. How is this playing? How are people reacting? Am I being praised? Am I being ripped? If I'm being ripped, how do I stop being ripped? That stuff. And I think that, translates to the players. The players start feeling like that. Is it a political thing? Harbaugh is not that. He's just not you saw that, we can go over the sign stealing stuff, but and I didn't write this because I'll be just accused of being a Harbaugh guy, but a lot of the reaction was because writers don't get to be clubby with him. They don't get to schmooze. So they got mad at him and they were going to take it out on him. I get it. Like, he broke rules. These are things that happen. If you don't curry the favor of the elite kind of people in this world, you're going to get hit. That's the price you pay. Harbaugh probably isn't denying that, but it ain't that thing where I just know that the guys on ESPN are going to defend me if this happens because I've been buddies with them for the years. That is not Jim Harbaugh. It's head down, do the job, be tough, and go on to the next thing. And I think the Chargers for sure could use that. Now, he took over for Mike Singletary with the 49ers, so Singletary had some of that. Singletary was just bizarre in a way that, you know, people might think Harbaugh's bizarre. He ain't as bizarre as Mike Singletary. So I think it will be ordered. It will be, like, ambitious, and it will be, like, this is it. The only thing you ought to be thinking about is winning this goddamn football game and then winning the next one and winning the next one. And you do that by toughness. You do that by, you know, physicality, aggressiveness. And I think that's something the Chargers have missed. With the talent they've got, I would think, it's something that could really, you know, work pretty quickly.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy? Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope. Because
I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, I mean, I think they got the right quarterback for that, too, just kind of what you're describing, right? I think whatever, you know, Herbert has or hasn't done, I do think like the toughness part is kind of the one thing that's really underrated about him. I mean, this guy's been taking, you know, especially early on. I mean, he was just taking bad hits in, you know, first couple of seasons. It's kind of one of those guys, you know, his arm could be in a sling and you ask him something about his arm. He's like, what are you talking about? You know, so I think that that's going to probably be a really good fit.
Well, that's interesting because, Alex Smith was sort of on his way out with the 49ers. And then Harbaugh partly takes a job because he likes Alex Smith. And he thought and Alex Smith was considered soft in his early years with the 49ers. And this is 5 years. You know, this is 5 years of struggles with Alex Smith. And Mike Nolan turned on him and Singletary turned on him. And Harbaugh's like, he's a free agent. Harbaugh's like, well, this is the guy. This is my guy. Now, he also drafted Kaepernick that year. But and I would say I'd say Herbert is an elevated version of Alex Smith, right? I mean, way elevated a version of the Alex Smith that Jim Harbaugh inherited. And if you're talking toughness, you're talking about a guy who has not been recognized for that. Harbaugh loves that stuff. He lives for this. Is why the Chargers would be, I think, his number one option. No shock that you got Herbert there, but it would really seem to fit the kind of the Harbaugh mentality.
Now, both of our basketball teams here. Well, I guess, there's a second team in Los Angeles.
You got another team there that's winning.
Yeah,
winning basketball team,
but we never talk about. But, right, the Lakers, Warriors, both are kind of on that the periphery of the play-in tournament now. How do you think things are looking with the Warriors right now?
Well, I just had the Draymond Green's first presser since he got suspended. Was interesting yesterday. Of course, Draymond is, very, very – talkative, very interesting, at times introspective, at times, apologetic, at times non-apologetic. And I like Draymond, but it doesn't, the words are not very important. It's what happens on the floor and they do need him. I think what people don't sometimes get about the way the Warriors operate, it's very practical. What's the best thing to win games? And it has been the commitment to Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green, but it doesn't always have to be that. And once it stops that, they won't go away from Steph, but if Draymond hits the floor and he's not that good and it's not worth this headache, I think they might look to move on from him. I think they've been thinking about that. But if he plays well and this team starts winning, then they'll keep him. These are all very practical decisions they've made over the years, maybe to their detriment in excusing him from some things that they shouldn't have excused him. Maybe they've accommodated him too much, but also it was because they felt it was just the best basketball move. And we'll see. I'll throw this one out to you. I mean, there's got to make some trades, at least one going into the trade deadline, which is coming up very quickly here. And I don't know if they're going to have the full information from Draymond at that point, because it'll be like six games by the time he comes back or whatever, how many games they've got left before the trade deadline. I think there's a chance that Draymond Green is traded to the Lakers because we know the relationship with LeBron James. Lakers might get into a situation where we just need something to get us better. Now, they don't need the defense, right? They're a pretty good defensive team. They're a bad offensive team, and Draymond doesn't really help that. But he changed the dynamics. I just, you're just looking for teams. If Draymond is moved, maybe it's not this trade deadline. Maybe it's next summer. I think he'd want to go to the Lakers, and I think LeBron James would want him. I don't know what that fit would be, but, man, that's kind of the quiet little whisper. Like, if they move him, where would he go? I think the Lakers would be his number one choice.
Well, his playmate, you're right. I mean, he's a good passer of the ball, and I think that can help, right? Now, they do need shooting right now, right? And so I don't think it's going to be just a, hey, Lakers get Draymond Green, and that's going to kind of be it. It's going to have to happen in, like, a larger context of thing. Obviously, I think everybody here is counting down the days until D'Angelo Russell gets traded, you know, and right.
So Warriors aren't taking him. Warriors aren't taking him back, but yeah, you have to send him somewhere else. Yes.
So presumably they'll get some shooters there, right? And then in that type of context, I could possibly see that. You know, I think that, again, they're just kind of they're not a very good shooting team right now. They don't, you know, with Vincent down, you know, they don't have like many playmakers really, you know, and so they're kind of struggling right now, you know, and they really need LeBron to kind of be Superman, frankly, to win, you know, as I predicted earlier in the season, you know, he's shown his age gradually. And as he's worn down, I mean, I think that that's a lot of what we're seeing right now. It's just kind of the motor's just kind of slowed down at this point in the season. You know, I mean, that said, I think for the Lakers, you know, just I think the way what they got away with doing last year, you know, where basically they were kind of one team up until the trade deadline, you know, they kind of pulled some rabbits out of their hat. All of a sudden they have a new team. I think they feel kind of comfortable with that in a way, because again, you know, I think they feel like if they have LeBron James and Anthony Davis healthy kind of at the end and they put the right pieces around them, it doesn't have to all be perfect at that time, but they can win some games like that. I guess what I'm curious about with like the Warriors, you know, you kind of mentioned that they might not have too much information, but like, how much, right, given like how important those, right, that team, right, particularly the big three guys, including, you know, Draymond and Clay, how, I mean, does that stop them from doing anything, do you think? Just in that you extend them another, you know, do you let them play out this season just because you don't want to break this thing up earlier than maybe that you have to?
I think there's some of that. And I think it's Steph related. It's all Steph related at this point. And if it's right for Steph, you can envision one more run, a shot at maybe you get the ace seed and you try to pluck off, somebody, a high seed. I think they keep it. And also because, frankly, Draymond and Clay, and I'll throw Wiggins in there, aren't going to get you much in a trade. You know, that's been part of decision-making too. You keep it because you're not getting the duplication of Clay from 5 years ago. So maybe you just hold on to him and hope he catches fire at some point and then decide what to do with his contract at the end of the season. They do have the Chris Paul expiring and he's not likely to be healthy before the trade deadline. There's another thing they can move. But I think, yeah, I mean, there is some of that. I think Steph has a big say in that. I think he was very heavily leaning towards bring Draymond back with the contract this summer. That doesn't mean he's always going to be like that. They might not have a better way around. I mean, I've kind of thrown out, try to figure out a way to get a center, like an actual center, which they really haven't had in years, change the way they play and maybe give Steph a kind of new energy. Don't know if that's available. Pascal Siakam. If they could get Siakam and they knew they could resign him, I think anybody's on the table except for Steph. Anybody. Break up the time, whatever. It's on the table. I don't think they're deluding themselves that what they've got as it stands is championship worthy. They can go get a fifth championship with this group. I think they've seen enough of that. I think, you know, the Wiggins decline has just gone on too long. The Clay thing, you know, he's about what he is. It's just can be valuable, but he's not going to be a leader of, you know, one of your two or three best players championship team. Draymond, you know, he's one swing away from being suspended for the rest of his career, I think. And, you know, Jonathan Kuminga is a young, interesting young player. Is he a guy you can – I don't know. There's all these – I don't know. So that's what I've said. Like, they've got a bunch of guys other than Curry that all have a reason to play and all have a reason not to play. And that's hard to kind of find the mix of that. figure out who should close, figure out who's defending who. I think the big move is on the table. They just have to find the right one. And I don't think they're going to give up a young player just for a rental. They'd have to know that, say, Siakam would resign the way that the Knicks knew that Anunoby would resign. I don't know that they're going to know that about Siakam. And I don't know if they want to pay it. If you know, he'd say, sure, you know, 4 years, 160, I'm in there. And do you do that? They're facing all the decisions. I don't think they're locked into anything, though, to go back to your question. Like, they're not saying we've got to keep Steph, Draymond, and Clay. I think they're past that. I think they're, what's the best basketball decision? Where can we, you know, find somebody new who would be better? And if we can't, let's get through this with dignity. You know, that's where the Draymond thing screws around. Like, let's show that we have honor through this and figure out as we go. I don't know that they're going to keep the three together in the next season. I don't know that they're going to do that. And say probably likelihood is they're not. I just don't know what the shape of that is. Depends on how they're playing. Depends on what the market is. Depends on, you know, will Clay come back for less, a lot less at this point. I've been saying this for a while, kind of been irritating Clay. Like, I'm hearing these national guys, oh, you know, when Clay gets that max offer from next, like, is somebody really going to make Clay a max offer? Have you watched him play for this season? Like, there's no way. And if he gets it, then the Warriors got to say, thanks. You know, it's been great, Clay. Goodbye. We're not paying that because he is not worth half of that. He just isn't. And Clay will listen to this and get mad at me, but he's not. He's a complimentary player at this point. Probably, like, if he's the fifth best player on your team, you got a championship level team. He can't be your second, third, or fourth.
One question I got is, you know, obviously there's the perception of Draymond Green from, say, out here. And I know, right, having worked up there during the Barry Bonds years, I understand how, you know, the Bay Area kind of views their hometown heroes a little bit differently. What's kind of the feel towards, you know, because I think, like, nationally, there's kind of this thing of, like, okay, this thing has kind of played itself out in an end. I think people are kind of waiting for this thing to just kind of be over at some point. What's the feel over there? How do people feel about Draymond?
I mean, there is a great respect for what he's achieved, how important he's been to championships, you know, what his level of play, Hall of Famer, future Hall of Famer, has meant to everybody, mostly to Steph Curry. But there's, I think, for a few years now, there's been this kind of two lines, you know, his value is going slightly down, his, you know, the troubles of dealing with him has kind of been going up. And when those lines intersect, and when it's more difficult to deal with him than it is worth the quality of play that he's delivering to you, it's going to happen pretty quickly. And the Bay Area sports fan base is kind of there, you know, close to there, I'll put it that way. And I think management's close to there. You get suspended, you screw up a season like this, like he's done twice this season. And this comes a year after punching a teammate, and like 6 months after stomping on Sabonis's chest and getting suspended for a playoff game when you were down 2-0 in the series. These are all, like, just kind of out there. And I think they're viewed with perspective. It's not all one thing. It's not, oh, Draymond, we'll be loyal to you forever. That's not that. That's Steph. That's not Draymond. Remember, even in the middle of this, he got suspended for a pretty important NBA Finals game in a series that they were leading 3-1, and then they lost the series. Like, there's been kind of acceptance of who he is while the Warriors were good. When the Warriors are not good, when they are struggling, when he is not playing great, although he's played fine this season in the rare game, in the games that he's played, but when he's not played well, it's more like, okay, is this worth it? And it's verging heavily towards it's not worth it. And they gave him the contract. That's something they're going to have to deal with. But I think it isn't the let's rally around Draymond and we shall defend him against all comers. That is not the feeling of the Bay Area. And hasn't really been for a couple years.
Speaking of teams kind of in a bind, my guy Farhan Zaidi up there. I can't imagine he loves being in this position where
does not
he's under pressure to make some moves, right? Top guys out on the market are Boris guys. This is probably not the position.
He's already signed one of them. No, this is exactly what he didn't want to do, and he got himself in the position. And I talked to him last week, and, you know, I think he accepts it. You know, he accepts the criticism. He doesn't love it. But he'll deal with it. And I've kind of seen him a few times and he hasn't loved it, but he comes, talks to me. I'm trying not to take cheap shots, and I think he does appreciate that part of it. But yeah, he's exactly where he doesn't want to be. You have to throw money at Scott Boras, and he's already overpaid. I think the money for Jung-Hoo Lee is probably right. It's high, but if he's anything close to what they think he is, you know, $22 million a year doesn't seem terrible if he's a good young athletic center fielder who's going to hit 317 and get on base 390. We'll see. Maybe 390 is too high, 380, 370. But yeah, so he's going to have to throw money at Matt Chapman probably more than he wants to, or Marcus Stroman, not a Boras guy, but on that list of available free agents. Yeah, this is where he's at. He doesn't like it, but too bad. You should have won the last 2 years, and you should have put yourself in a better position to sign the top guys. And I think they messed up. Now, nobody was slamming on the door that much saying you've got to re-sign Gausman after you won 107 games. I think some people were saying that, though. And you've got to sign Marcus Semien to a $176 million contract after 107 wins, with Brandon Crawford playing really well in 2021. But they should have. That's how you avoid this situation, where you're desperate, where your fan base is on the verge of revolt, where you're not getting people to Oracle Park when that is the lifeblood of this franchise. So he's in an uncomfortable situation, but he got Bob Melvin, which was a real solid compromise step, and then he's going to have to sign some people. Like, you know, if he doesn't end up with Chapman at least and one other guy, like say Chapman and Stroman, again, this is not a roster that at the end of that you'd think would take down the Dodgers, but you wouldn't have thought the Dodgers would get taken down by the Padres 2 years ago, right? In the play, like, you never know in a short series. Just got to be the third or fourth best team in the regular season and then see what happens. Would they have a better shot of that if they signed Chapman and Stroman? Let's say yes. I didn't love Imanaga, even though I think he's got pretty good stuff. You've got me on this, Dylan. Like, if he's throwing 94 in the Japan leagues every 6 day, is he going to throw 91 in the majors?
You know, I think that's very possible. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you know, because there are not many, you know, even just when you look at the guys that have come here from Japan that have done better, right? These are like bigger guys, right? It's the Darvishes, you know, Tanaka was a pretty big guy. You know, Hiroki Kuroda was a pretty big guy, you know? And so I really do think that the size thing kind of matters, you know, and, you know, as it relates to the Dodgers, you know, again, the Yamamoto thing, I really kind of wonder here, you know, and as much as, you know, I know there's been all this talk about, oh, it's unfair, the Dodgers have gone out and spent all this money, right? Baseball's not one of those sports where just because you throw money at something, you know, if you can't pitch, it's not going to matter almost. And, you know, to me, at the top of the rotation, they have three huge, huge question marks in Yamamoto, Glasnow, and Buehler, you know, and every one of those, I mean, look, every one of those could come up, you know, come up good for them. And in which case, look, they're going to be World Series favorites. But there's a scenario where all three of those don't go the way they hoped. And they're going to actually be in a very, very similar situation to where they were last year, where, you know, I mean, the major upgrade that they've made so far has been at DH, right? And they already had a pretty good DH last year in JD Martinez. And you're just basically upgrading to like Ohtani. Yes, that does make you better, but it doesn't address kind of that pitching problem, you know? So I still think, yeah, that's the thing, right? And I think you're right. You know, you just need to kind of give yourself a chance just to kind of be there, because as much money as the Dodgers have spent, I do not view this as a, you know, there's certain years where you kind of look at a team and you're just thinking, you know, and I obviously, ironically, these things never work out anyway, right? I remember that Phillies, yep. Remember there was a Phillies team a long time ago with Cliff Lee and Halliday, and right, they had the four aces, and you're thinking
the Giants beat them.
Yeah, the Giants going to the World Series for sure, right? I was actually there, you know, and things like that happen, right? So
Roy Oswalt, you say Oswalt, right?
They had, Oswalt was three, and who's the other guy?
Uh oh,
there was a fourth guy. Maybe it was Joe.
Yeah, Boyd. It wasn't a great one, but yeah, might be.
But yeah, might be. Yeah, but that's the thing is, you know, you give yourself a chance to get into these things, especially like, you know, these series aren't very long. You can make things happen, you know, so. But yeah, I think it's interesting, right, because, you know, Andrew Friedman said before once, you know, if you're rational with every free agent, you're going to finish third in the bidding every time, you know. Now, the problem is if you stay rational, then you need to go the level of irrationality that you have to get to actually get a guy, right, increases, I think, with every guy that you do pass on, you know. And fortunately for the Dodgers, I mean, they just got Ohtani, who's just basically printing money for them, right? Yep. And they were kind of able to, you know, they've kind of neglected their pitching, I feel, for quite a while, both in, you know, how they're developing them right now, or, you know, down in A-ball, these guys don't throw more than like three innings. Just, you know, throw it as hard as you can, right? So you're not getting the kind of prototypical ace. They haven't gone after that guy in the market, really. And it kind of put them in this position where they had to kind of spend crazy money to do it. And again, fortunately, Ohtani kind of took care of that financial side of that for them. And so they've gone out and kind of taken these, you know, huge gambles now that they probably never would have even done last year. But I kind of view the Giants being a little bit kind of in that position now, too, where, right, they're going to have to, because now it's, you're not getting guys. And now you're going to have to, you know, make that kind of financial commitment to ensure that you get the guy. And, you know, that doesn't work out now. It's going to set you back a bit. So, yeah, I can't, just kind of knowing, you know, Zaidi from his time here in LA, I can't imagine that this is like, you know, a position that he wants to be in.
It's a rough time. Yeah, it's a rough time for him. Yeah, it's a rough time, you know, but I'll say they kind of got themselves into it by kind of messing around last year. Maybe if Correa had passed that physical, it would feel different. I think it would, at least a little different, but that did not happen. You don't get credit for the deals that did not happen. But, you know, if they go into a playoff series, if Robbie Ray is healthy, if Alex Cobb is healthy, if they go in a playoff series with Logan Webb, Robbie Ray, you know, Alex Cobb and Marcus Stroman, I don't think the Dodgers would love that. I wouldn't pick the Giants probably to win it, but then you've got Matt Chapman at third, Jung-Hoo Lee is center. I mean, like, again, this is not the Dodgers. This is not Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman and everything that we know. And, God, Shohei Ohtani, that's right. I keep forgetting that guy is going to be in the middle of the lineup. But I could see it. There's a plausibility there. That's how they sell it to themselves. But they still better get these guys, and you can't not win. But I looked at Imanaga, and I thought, you know, listen, it would have been splashy. I'm sure we're in on him. But I look at it going, there's a guy who could end up like Barry Zito at age 31. Like that's, yeah. And he's 30 now, right? I think he's not young, different than Yamamoto. And he's throwing, you know, 91 and 85, you know, mile per hour changeups. And that might not be great. You know, that's, I understand why you back off on that one, but then you better get somebody else. You better get one more starter and at least one position player. And then I think you can honestly say, we got a shot at this. We got a shot at better than Diamondbacks, right? And the Diamondbacks made it to the World Series. I still don't quite know how that worked, but that's how these short series go. And sell yourself on that. And maybe some, you know, maybe Marco Luciano develops and you've got, oh, I didn't even put Kyle Harrison in that rotation, Dylan. So like these are how you sell it, and you've got to be irrational. I threw that irrational quote at him, and he did not love that. I bet your Friedman doesn't love it at this point, but he said, I was there when he said it. But this is the business you're in. You got to do some things that are just going to stir the marketplace up. They did one middling thing with Jung-Hoo Lee. Let's see what else they can do. They still got to do it, but it has been a slow market. You're just not beating the Dodgers. But guess what? Who's beating the Dodgers in this offseason? Who's come close? Nobody. Nobody. So you can't just say, okay, we're done, Dodgers. Like then the Mets and the Red Sox and the Blue Jays and the freaking Rangers have to say, oh, forget about it. No, you can't. You got to build the best team you can. And then maybe somebody else picks them off in a short series, or maybe you pick them off in a short series.
We got breaking news.
There's news.
Kawhi Leonard has been signed to an extension. The Clippers just announced.
Oh my goodness! Wow, yeah. Clippers making things happen, making things happen.
Yeah, he could have opted out after this year. You know.
Yep. So you think Paul George
this year? It's their last year at Crypto.com Arena. You know, yep. They're going to be moving into their new thing. You know, it was. It's been very much a feel around the Clippers, kind of like right seniors in high school. Everybody's kind of ready to move on. And so this guarantees at least that Kawhi will be there when the new arena opens. And obviously he's the guy, right? I mean, you know, missed a few games.
Paul George would follow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Paul George would. Yeah. And Kawhi's playing great, by the way. He's playing absolutely great. And Paul George can be a free agent also. James Harden will be a free agent. I don't know about Harden, but I imagine, you probably re-sign all three and then go in and next season. We'll see what happens this season and then go in next season with those guys on the roster.
Yep. Yeah.
Very good. We'll end it with that. Dylan Hernandez checking his social media, making sure we get all the latest news on this very podcast. All the Clippers stuff. Everyone's tuning in for the Clippers.
Well, they can't accuse us of ignoring them now.
There you go. They're big time. We finished. We're the kicker. The kicker was the Clippers because everybody was waiting on with bated breath for that one.
We could do MLS next week.
MLS, absolutely. I got to complain about soccer on something I don't talk about on them. So when did I ever talk about soccer? When did I ever advertise that that would be your soccer resource? That didn't quite happen. And Dylan Hernandez is going to have lunch with an old friend of mine, boxing publicist Bill Kaplan. So let's just shout him out on the show. Bill Kaplan, I'm saying hello. Have a good lunch with Dylan.